Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Tuesday, May the 13th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, businesses in Maidstone are left clearing up after a man went on the rampage with a fire extinguisher. Find out where trains are most likely to be delayed and an historic building in Dover reopens. But first, a Kent police inspector is due to face a misconduct hearing after being found guilty of assaulting a woman. James Bowtridge was suspended from duty following the attack in Maidstone in September 2023. The 49-year-old, who lives in the Green in Bearsted, was handed a community order and fined £650. He'll now face a review from the Force's Professional Standards Department. Our reporter Alex Langridge has been covering this story and joins me now on the podcast. Alex, first, can you give us some background about James Bowtridge and about the attack on a woman that happened in 2023?
Bowtridge was arrested and charged with assault by beating following the incident at property in Maidstone on the 2nd of September 2023. He pleaded not guilty to the offence in April last year and was remanded on bail in the following November. However, on the 2nd of May this year, he was found guilty and following a trial at Southend Magistrates Court and handed a community order to complete 100 hours of unpaid work and pay fines of up to £650.
And now he's facing a misconduct hearing. What can you tell us about that?
When he was first arrested, he was suspended from duty and Kent Police has now confirmed that following this conviction, its Professional Standards Department will now resume misconduct proceedings against him. It's not sure yet when these will be and when a verdict will be determined.
And what can you tell us about new vetting procedures that have been introduced, Alex?
Last month, new vetting measures were introduced in Parliament as part of the government's plans to improve confidence in policing. It now means it will be a legal requirement for all serving police officers to pass a background check and create a process to dismiss staff who do not meet the set standards. Further measures are also set to be introduced to suspend officers under investigation for violence against women and girls and to ensure those convicted of certain offences are automatically found to have committed gross misconduct. Officers can fail vetting for several reasons, such as crimes like domestic and sexual abuse. While there are processes already in place for the forces to deal with allegations of misconduct, failing vetting alone may not be currently enough to dismiss them. However, these changes to the process will now be in force from May 14th.
Alex, thank you ever so much. Elsewhere, five Met police officers are facing dismissal after petrol bombs were allegedly thrown at a specialist training centre in Gravesend. They're thought to have been removed from storage in 2022 and caused a fire at the site in Mark Lane with £10,000 worth of damage. A misconduct hearing is taking place this week. And the man who oversees the police in Kent is calling for answers following the arrest of a retired special constable for warning about anti-Semitism. Julian Foulkes was detained at his home in Gillingham after challenging a pro-Palestine supporter on X. He's now launched legal action against the force who've apologised. Commissioner Matthew Scott says he'll be raising concerns with the Chief Constable.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you today. And a man's been taken to hospital following a stabbing in Canterbury. Police and paramedics were called to Spring Lane last night and found him injured. A 36-year-old man's been arrested. A 45-year-old's been arrested after a shop worker was attacked at a Tesco Express in Folkestone. Police were called to reports of an assault on Ford Road on Sunday afternoon. Witnesses say the suspect crashed the scooter he was riding. And an 11-year-old boy's been detained after liquid was allegedly thrown from a plastic bottle during an attack at a newsagent's in Hoo. Police were called to reports a group of children had gone into the business on Main Road on Saturday. The boy, who's from Chatham, has been bailed and extra patrols are taking place. A teenager appeared in court accused of being involved in supplying drugs in Medway. Police made an arrest near the Luton part of Chatham and later found wraps of heroin and a mobile phone. An 18-year-old from Thorold Road has been remanded in custody. Now, a refugee charity is calling on the Prime Minister to apologise for language he used in a speech about immigration. Sir Keir Starmer was laying out plans yesterday to reduce the number of people coming to the UK. He said, without new rules, we risk becoming an island of strangers. But that's not gone down well, and Kate has been talking to Steve Smith, who's from Care for Calais.
We find the reference to strangers particularly dangerous, xenophobic. It harks back almost to Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech in the 1960s. So he referred to people finding themselves strangers in their own country, and today we've got Keir Starmer talking about an island of strangers. Now, many of us, might have voted for Keir Starmer because we wanted him to do the right thing. but we didn't anticipate him pandering to the right, and that appears to be what he's doing. So we're really concerned about the language, and it's that sort of language that inflames the situation and to some extent causes incidents like the riots that we saw last summer.
And we've seen today as well, more people have crossed the channel to Kent. Sadly, one person has lost their life in the crossing and some others were injured. How is language, such as the language that Sir Keir Starmer is using, how does that shape people's view of these people that are coming to the UK?
Yeah, this sort of language shapes that view all the time. It's almost like subliminal advertising, because on the face of it, what Keir Starmer's talking about is bringing down overall net migration. So in 2024, overall net migration was 728,000. And it's all sorts of people. He was talking about those that work in care homes. He's talking about those that work in the NHS. But inevitably, it gets dragged across. The issue gets conflated into the concerns over people crossing the channel in small boats. And so almost immediately after Keir Starmer stopped speaking, we already had Nigel Farage almost gleefully gloating that 250 asylum seekers had been spotted coming across the channel in small boats. And there's talk already about, well, if reform were in, we would deal with this by leaving the European Convention on Human Rights. It's not supposed to be about that. It's supposed to be about overall migration into the country. But for the average passerby who's only listening with half an ear, it all becomes about those seeking safety, those that are fleeing war, persecution, conflict, modern day slavery, trafficking, torture, you name it. Seeking safety, it becomes about them. And yet they are only a tiny number of those involved in migration into the UK.
Today, Dover MP Mike Tapp insists residents will be welcoming government plans to reduce immigration. New legislation was announced to tighten visa requirements. However, there are concerns it could lead to a shortage of overseas care workers.
Kent Online reports.
Figures out today show a slight drop in unemployment in Kent. 41,245 people were claiming out-of-work benefits in the county in March. That's down by 50 compared to the previous month. A corner shop in Herne Bay will be allowed to keep its licence despite complaints about underage sales. Police and trading standards were called following reports Canera Express in Station Road was selling alcohol and vapes to children on a daily basis. Their legal team challenged the credibility of the allegations and they've been allowed to keep the licence with added restrictions. Now, video at Kent Online today shows the moment part of the roof fell down from a former Debenhams building in Canterbury. Firefighters were called to the derelict store in Sun Street after wood was seen hanging from the building yesterday evening. It was removed safely and we're told no one was hurt. Next, businesses in Maidstone have been left clearing up after a number of windows were smashed with a fire extinguisher. Footage that you can also see on the website shows a topless man targeting a number of buildings on King Street on Sunday night. The rampage caused thousands of pounds worth of damage. Well, Julie Clark is from Real Eating Co., one of the businesses affected, and she's been chatting to Bartholomew Hall from our colleagues at KMTV.
What have you had to say to your staff today?
Well, I've had to lay them off. You know, Grace was due in at the same time as me, so I've laid her off. I've let tomorrow's staff know as well that they probably won't be in. We don't know about Wednesday. Glazier's been here today. Can take up to 3 days for the new window, so it's going to affect the business big time.
You reckon you'll be closed for that whole time?
Well, I think so. But, I mean, you know, if I can get it to a state where perhaps it's safe, then maybe we'd be able to open and do takeaway coffees or something. But at this moment in time, I can't open. As you can see, it's just a mess everywhere. We've had to move all the furniture out of the way. I've got to hoover all the furniture because it's got glass on it. You know, it's just not a simple job. You know, one little thing leads to another little thing, yeah. You know.
So frustrating, I'd imagine. But what would this mean in terms of the business? Because we're out of time, yeah.
Devastating. I mean, I've had to, you know, I've lost the business today. Possibly tomorrow, I've had to throw away food. I've had to cancel deliveries, which they've been, you know, obligingly, you know, they've done that. So that's good. We haven't got to waste that food, but it's devastating. We're only a small company, you know, we're only eight in the whole chain, and you know, one shop shut for 2 or 3 days is a big. That is major impact.
Bartholomew also caught up with Alex Knight from Knight Edmonds Estate Agents.
We were sitting at home last night and one of the girls in the team shared in the group chat that someone had been walking up and down King Street smashing all the windows, logged on, looked at the CCTV, saw that he'd done two of ours.
What was your initial reaction and the reaction of the team?
It's frustrating. You know, you're trying to get on, you're trying to run a business, you're trying to just work from day to day, and then all of a sudden Monday you come in, you've got a full list of things you want to get done for the week, and all of a sudden you've now got to go around shopping around for quotes, trying to get a new window fitted.
Now, police have told us they were initially called to reports of a break-in at Sainsbury's on nearby Romney Place. A 23-year-old man has been arrested.
Kent Online reports.
Next today, we've been hearing from Southeastern about what they plan to do to improve the reliability of services across Kent. It all comes as new data shows trains from Higham, Greenhithe, Northfleet and Swanscombe railway stations are the most likely to be cancelled. They're part of the Thames Link line, which is one of the most complex in the country. Well, reporter Cara Simmons has been speaking to Scott Brightwell from Southeastern.
Obviously, we face challenges in relation to the weather, so we will have all experienced, you know, travel in general, not just rail, being impacted by, you know, named events such as storms or, you know, extremes in weather, whether that be, you know, really hot days that have impacted roads and rail. But likewise, we also have disruptive trespass incidents. We had a really complex operation successfully delivering for the London Marathon, where lots and lots of, you know, runners and, you know, and supporters were using our network. And we had 14 trespass incidents over the weekend alone. You know, this is a huge, huge challenge for the railway, because when people trespass on the railway, their lives are in danger. So we have to stop the trains and we have to turn off the electrical supply until we're absolutely sure that nobody's in an unsafe position. And that has a huge knock-on impact. And that trend and trajectory has been getting worse for a number of years. So we're working really closely with the British Transport Police and Network Rail, having joint plans as part of our tripartite agreement around what we can do to improve that. And I'm really excited. Some of the things we're doing to improve, we've got drone technology being used, for example, that can be launched and go up to make sure that the lines are clear and that nobody's in danger, so we can then open up and get trains moving quickly and safely again, so that the size of disruption is reduced. That's just one example of the things that we're trying to wrestle with the challenges of operating a railway. You also end up with, in addition to weather and trespass, there are also other items like, you know, trains. Some of our trains are fairly old and they can break down. It's a bit like, you know, everyone's got a car or as a family member where their car's broken down at some stage. You know, trains do break down. So it's important that we make those as reliable as we possibly can. And we have a strategy to improve and modify our trains. When we understand what's going wrong with the trains, we'll fix or modify the widgets that are going wrong to make the trains more and more reliable. When we talk about weather and rain, for example, we are investing millions of pounds with Network Rail in the infrastructure to improve drainage in some key locations. And all of those in different areas have impacted how we've been able to deliver for passengers.
Plans have been put in for a new energy storage facility near Dartford. An application for the farmland in Greenhithe includes more than 100 batteries in containers, with only half the site being built on. After 40 years, the land would be returned to agricultural use. An HMO in Faversham could be knocked down after it was severely damaged in a fire which claimed the life of a busker. James Renane was killed in the blaze at Mill House in Salters Lane last August. It's believed to have been sparked by an electric scooter. Plans have been put in to rebuild a village pub near New Ash Green, which burned down after being struck by lightning. The Green Man in Hodsall Street was demolished in 2021 after serving the community for more than 130 years. The new owners of the site have now applied to build a replacement.
Kent Online News.
Next on the podcast today, and we've been hearing from a Kent secondary school about their initiative to help improve students' mental health. The Skinners Academy in Tunbridge Wells have created the EcoZoner, an outdoor learning environment with an eco toilet, fire bowl and solar panels. It's been set up as a bit of a sanctuary for students after staff noted the positive impacts of Forest School. Well, Kate has been chatting to Hannah Knowles, who's the head of Skinners Academy.
We've been doing a lot of work with the Forest School initiative generally, and so we had for a couple of years previously taken a group of young people down. We're situated by a local wood. And we had our forest school running in the local woods, which we were very lucky to do so. And it enabled us to take around 10, 15 young people weekly down to our forest school that we built within the local forest. And we still have that. But it was noted that that meant taking everything down in terms of equipment. It meant that it was only accessible for our forest leaders to run. It meant that it was, although it is a 5-10 minute walk, it meant that it wasn't as easy as just, utilizing something that's on site. So we decided that as part of some work with our Ukrainian school, what we really, really noticed was the benefit of getting our young people outside in kind of a calm environment whereby actually the use of nature meant that we were still teaching, skills that we're teaching inside the classroom, like resilience and communication skills, but they seemed to be slightly more open to it when we did it outside and in the woods. So we started a plan to see whether we could produce and create some outdoor classrooms, and that's essentially what the Ecozona is. So it was a patch of unused land that we had behind our mugas, so our playgrounds. You couldn't use it for anything else other than kind of being outside and in nature, and it was just a bit of wasteland essentially. So what we've done is we've put an outdoor classroom out there, which has got the ability to have that in the winter and the summer because it has surrounds. So we put the winter kind of wrapping on it. It has a fire pit and then it has a chimney going up, so you can have it going all year round. It meant that we could have solar panels as well, so we've attached solar panels to it, a water butt, and so we've got Wi-Fi out there. We can use electricity. It's got lighting because of the solar panels, and then we decided to have a that's called the octagon. Then we decided to have the square, which is doesn't have the kind of the roofing and such, but it is just a big outdoor classroom with benches. And over at how it's developed is we don't just use it for forest school, but we use it for general lessons as well. So staff can go out there and teach their maths, teach their science, teach their geography, teach their PE, but they do it in the outside environment rather than in a traditional classroom.
And have you started to see a shift in the students' mental health and what it does for their mental well-being?
Yeah, definitely. So we use it a lot for our targeted intervention. And so if I can give you some stats behind that, so sort of 95% of our young people who have participated in our forest school and hence the Ecozona have improved their attendance by about 20%. We use the Leuven scale in order to judge, kind of provide insight to their emotional well-being, and they are increasing, term by term in terms of just their emotional well-being, their happiness, their ability to be kind of resilient, and also around social communication skills, for which some young people they may join us and struggle with that. And we again, we do a lot of team building activities within the Ecozona. And it allows them to work together in a different light. And I think we can definitely see that it's having a positive impact. It's a strategy to use. We don't use it all the time. We don't use it for all students. But over time, that notion of forest school, particularly as one, I mean, we're probably one of a very few number of secondary schools in Kent that run forest school. But if you look at the number of young people that do forest school at primary school, it's huge. But yet we stop it at the age of 11. And my question is why, when actually the skills, if it's seen as such a valuable insight and tool to use at primary, we should be embracing that and learning from our primary colleagues in that regard.
Now, the Ecozona has been nominated for Pupil Mental Health Initiative of the Year at the TES School Awards. Huge congratulations for getting that far. Now, it is Mental Health Awareness Week, which this year has the theme of community. And every day in the podcast, we're going to be hearing about what's being done in Kent to tackle the stigma. Now, for the first time in 800 years, a building in Dover has permanently opened to the public after a multi-million pound refurb. The Maison Dieu now has interactive displays and audio points telling its history. Our reporter Sam Lennon has been along to see it for himself and has been chatting to council leader Kevin Mills, who says it's been a lot of work.
We've had to do all the decoration. A lot of the people won't see because we have to make sure it's watertight. And let's face it, that we've been up there for 100 years. So every time we found a problem, we found another problem. Then we had to put out new heating systems, brand new kitchens in it. So it's a complete and utter revamp of the whole building. And as I'm sure you will agree, it's much lighter now. It's much more attractive. It actually is a place you want to go into and want to be part of. So, it's a £10.5 million project. It's taken 2.5 years to get to this stage. And to be perfectly honest, it will need investment going forward. But, as of this weekend, it will be open, permanently open, first time in 800 years to the public. Yeah, so it's really exciting times. I know we've got a number of events booked in, but you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we should consider all options for utilising this, yeah, particularly for the people of this district, but also for people from further afield, so they can come down, they can enjoy it. You know, where else, you know, could cruise liners come with this amount of history? And let's face it, next door goes back to about 1203.
Right.
Yeah, so if you're American, actually, it predates America. It's really exciting times. It's just capturing that. But at the same time, you know, not forgetting, you know, the local residents and providing facilities, entertainment, etc. for them. So, you know, it's going to be exciting.
Sam also spoke to Paul Wells from the Dover Society.
Well, the Dover Society got involved in the Maser during 2010. We were quite concerned about the state of the building. It was looking very tired, worn out. The gutters were leaking, paint peeling off the walls. So we got together with the district council and the town council to sort of come up with the idea of a major restoration for the building to sort of do it justice for the town, because it's a major asset, historical asset for the town.
It is. It's an 800-year-old asset. I mean, it's what do you think it'll offer the people of Dover? Do you think it's another tourism asset for Dover now? I mean, there was a mention of Kevin Mills with mentioning cruise ships coming in. Do you think that will sort of give it a little more pull for Dover?
Yeah, there's so many historical assets in Dover this will add to. The Western Heights, Dover Castle, the White Cliffs of Dover, Roman Painted House, the town's full of history. So it's just another pull to the tourist into the town, for tourists and residents.
And Selina Papa is from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, which provided some of the cash.
The National Lottery Heritage Fund invests lottery players' good causes money into projects that will bring good to people and communities. And what's been achieved here is a really great example of what heritage can do to bring our high streets, our town centres and our communities back to life. As a steward of lottery funders' money, it's really important to us that the projects we fund are of value to the local community, but also really do have a sustainable future. And we do a lot of work at the very beginning of project ideas with the stakeholders, with the applicants, to make sure that the project, the heritage that they focus on, is really treasured by the community and that they've got kind of viable plans ahead. For Maison Dieu, we saw that right from the vision through to the community engagement that's been achieved all the way through the project.
What do you think it'll give the people of Dover, who are so used to this building, it's been here for centuries?
Yes.
I remember back to the 80s.
Yes. Just from my conversations this morning with various kind of stakeholders and interested parties, I understand that the building will continue to host the range of activities that Dover residents have really enjoyed here for centuries.
Such as
boxing, brewing, banqueting, all manner of activities that excite the community, and that's important to us. And we don't want to invest in buildings that have no relevance to local people or to visitors.
Do head to the Dover pages of Kent Online to see pictures of the Maison Dieu. A former Royal Marine has completed the world's longest triathlon. Mitch Hutchinson started in Dover last September and has swum, cycled, run and trekked more than 8,000 miles to the top of Everest. He's done it to raise money for an organisation supporting veterans. And finally, you can follow us on socials to see a picture of a huge spider spotted in a garden in Raynham. It's thought it could be a green fanged tube web spider, the UK's biggest and most venomous. Their bite has been described as something like a bee sting.
Kent Online Sports.
Tennis first up, and Kent's Emma Raducanu says she's feeling positive despite being knocked out of the Italian Open. She was beaten in straight sets by American Coco Gauff, who's through to the quarterfinals. But the run to the last 16 was Emma's best ever performance at the tournament in Rome. And in football, Gillingham have confirmed they'll play a pre-season friendly at Ebbsfleet United. It'll be a 7 p.m. kickoff on Tuesday, July the 22nd, 3 days before a trip to Chatham Town. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. Whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.